Billy Crosby, Miriam Barnard, Aaron Dooley, Hugh Grant, David Prude, R.L. Boone, Vesta Goddard. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
Animal research gives experimenters a paycheck, but it doesn't give us cures for human illnesses. Using animals is costly, it's cruel, inefficient, and it's old-fashioned. Sophisticated non-animal research methods, using whole human DNA, for example, is where our money should go. Help us insist on modern research. Wait, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. That's PETA, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Ladies and gentlemen, our oceans are in trouble. Careless activities by people at sea and on land have created the dire state of the oceans today. Routine activities on land and water contribute to 6.4 million tons of debris entering the ocean every year. If you care, you will go to www.keepoceansclean.org and see what you can do to make a difference. Thank you.
Once upon a time, there lived three energy hogs. Now, an energy hog is what you have when humans waste energy. One day, the three energy hogs set out to find themselves a cottage.
Let's look for leaky windows,
said the first energy hog, for he knew that would waste energy.
Let's look for leaky doors,
said the second.
Let's look for a swing set,
said the third, for he had more blubber than brains. So they set off down the road. Presently, they came upon a tiny cottage where dwelled a clever girl named Dreadylocks.
I hope it has leaky windows,
cried the first energy hog.
I hope it has leaky doors,
cried the second.
I hope it has a bathroom,
cried the third, for only his brains were smaller than his bladder. But Dreadylocks liked playing cool games at energyhog.org. And from energyhog.org, she learned how to use energy wisely. So the three energy hogs were forced to look elsewhere to waste energy and had to use the disgusting restroom at the gas station down the road. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org or waste not, hog not.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, where all is well, and it's time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, and tonight joined by Kyle.
Hello.
And we're ready earlier than usual. That's why we're interrupting the theme a bit earlier than we usually do.
Mm-hmm.
We're just more organized, can I say.
Running tests and, well...
Did you hear that? It was an EAS test at the top of the... That was just a test, folks. Don't panic. And apparently all you have to do is play the tones because we live in a digital world now and we don't speak English anymore. We just send little beeps and that conveys if there's an emergency or not.
Yeah, and you would have known that was an emergency because we would have followed up with the right amount of panic.
Yes. In the event this was an actual emergency, you would have heard a lot of screaming and hollering after that attention signal.
Yeah, but we're not panicked, so that's how you know everything.
Oh, speak for yourself.
Wait.
I'm plenty panicked.
Oh, yeah, we're starting the show. Okay, no, you're right.
No, it's not because of that. It's not because... It's we're starting the third age of mankind.
No, I get it. I understand. No, I know what you're saying now. I just didn't realize we'd start talking about that.
Oh, the cynicism starts right away, Kyle. Right away. It doesn't wait for the theme to end. You know, speaking of the theme, I'm going to miss this theme. Isn't this beautiful? I mean, you heard it. We were in Seattle, and the radio was on in the background. I think you were making pasta or something.
I was cooking, yeah.
And this was just on the radio in the background, and you were like, holy gosh. Well, you said a different word, but...
That's the theme.
I know that. That's the Philip Glass music, but it wasn't Philip Glass. It's that other guy's name I keep forgetting.
Alec Karras.
Alec Karras, yes.
And it was the same tune, absolutely, but a different performance than what we had been using at the time, and we changed it to this solo performance.
During the second term of Obama, this became our theme. We changed the themes every time a president takes a new term. We didn't do it the first time, okay? We started in 2003, and I think we didn't do it in 2005. But I think every 4 years since then we've changed it. So it's coming up.
It's
January 20th, 2017. This theme will be extinct.
It's every term, and where appropriate, it's
mm-hmm.
changed. Yeah.
But yeah.
Stay, prepare yourselves. Prepare yourselves, stay tuned. We're working diligently on coming up with this change that will change along with the
we're not. I mean, it's the theme staff that's working on it. We have a bunch of people. They don't really do anything for 3 years, but on that fourth year they knock their heads together and they come up with something that will be an appropriate theme for the next 4 years.
Isn't it the same as the band that comes in? The same people, right?
Yeah, sometimes.
The mariachi.
Well, yeah, because of legal reasons we don't talk about them anymore. But yeah, some of them were the same. Those surviving members are still...
They came back, they needed extra hours. It was a charity thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
we
yeah.
did the deal. It was a great deal. It was a fabulous deal.
All right, you know, I'm just going to put a stop to that right now because I have very little patience. Very, very little patience for everywhere you go. You know, I thought, we were talking about this over a year ago. I thought, okay, the joke's going to play out at some point. And you know what? It's not ever going to end. It's never going to stop. Turn on the radio and you hear that. You hear the name. You hear the name within 5 seconds, no matter what you're listening to, because he always does something to get himself into the headlines.
Yeah, people are like forcing themselves to not say it. I heard a pundit or anchor, or someone challenging themselves, and then they slipped and said the name. I think it was a late night talk show on
uh-huh.
WBAI, but it's hard to avoid, but it's not the only thing that's going on. It's just everything going on around that eventuality.
Well, yeah.
Lots to talk about there.
There's other bits of news. For instance, today, did you know that Boeing's stock tanked? Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah. Because I'm sorry, I didn't see the second part of the story. Boeing's the stock tanked because Donald Trump said in a tweet that he was canceling the Air Force One deal. And here's the interesting thing about that. There was a piece in the Chicago Tribune that came out early this morning that basically, I'll just read the opening paragraph. The brain trust at Boeing among the city's largest companies and a global aerospace and defense powerhouse must cringe every time President-elect Donald Trump riffs on foreign policy, especially when it comes to dealing with China. And then goes on to basically explain how the CEO of Boeing is kind of nervous about Trump. Less than an hour later, Donald Trump tweets that Boeing is building a brand new 747 Air Force One for future presidents, but costs are out of control, more than $4 billion. Cancel order! Exclamation point. And then the stock tanked right after that. So you see what happens. He reads something or hears something from anybody. It could be a corporation right here in America. He will lash out and cause tremendous damage. And that's an example right now of what he did today. Just because he didn't like what was being said or the doubts that were being expressed.
Well, Trump has a plane, so he's taken care of. He doesn't need any Air Force One. He'll be fine. He'll just flap his arms.
Yeah, you know, I'm all for that. Yeah, give it a try. That plane of his isn't gonna stand up. He has no idea what he's getting into. He really doesn't. He thinks he does, but
yeah, undermine the thing that is going to ferry you around and keep you safe. To say nothing about the rest of us will be in that very thing you're deriding right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm for letting him try it. Really, go ahead, give it a spin. You know, see how it stands up to whatever it has to face. I don't know. I'm not sure what they do on these planes anyway. It's probably a lot better than anything we ever get.
Yeah. Well, he wants a better deal than than what is being thrown around now as far as costs. And I'm sure that they can find a way to cut corners for him.
Yeah, well, the thing is, these planes aren't even going to be delivered until, like, 2023, so it's not something that, God willing, he won't be around then. This is something that he's just basically spouting off about. Because something rubbed him the wrong way. And, you know, he will do this for almost anything. Anything. Not almost anything. There is nothing that is out of bounds, I don't think.
So the deal is in a couple of years. I see. So it won't even be something he would benefit from if he was even purporting. If he was making a better deal, it's not something that he would even get to enjoy. So he's going to ruin it for someone else.
Well, I don't know if ruin it is the right word, but just basically, stick his nose into,
ruin the company, and then...
Well, it's lashing out. It's lashing out at somebody that he perceived as being faintly critical. And this is what tyrants, this is what dictators do. And I know there are people that think this is somehow different. And I'd like to know what evidence is there that this is any different. He shows all the same exact symptoms as any 2-bit dictator or even 3-bit dictators from the past, where they're tremendously hostile towards the media. They don't like minorities. They are hostile against refugees or anybody that's different from them. They're sexist, homophobic, racist. And loud, and they command huge crowds of angry people that commit violent acts. Every single one of those categories he has fit easily. He doesn't apologize for any of it. He doesn't react when people do horrible things in his name. He does react when SNL does a skit about him. Very sensitive about his image. Yells at the press about the pictures they're printing of him. I mean, for God's sake, Trevor Noah says this all the time. This guy is the same as an African dictator. And we're very familiar with those over in Africa. It's something that maybe we don't know that much about here. We're going to find out. But the problem is, he has so much power. So much can go wrong. So much can be damaged as a result of his stupidity, his pigheadedness. I mean, think about this. Right now, he's president-elect, and he's already pissed off China, made Boeing tank, and gotten all these horrible people. Promises of powerful jobs in the future. What happens January 20th when he actually has the power to do things, to make things happen? What happens when he kills his first person? Because presidents do kill people. You know, they don't actually go out there and shoot them. But or they could, I guess, but they launch invasions. They give permission for airstrikes and drone strikes and all sorts of things like that. When he gets that power into his teeny brain, I'm just I really wonder where it's going to go from there. You know, what's that taste of blood going to be like?
Or how will we rationalize it then?
Mm-hmm.
How will we? What excuses will we make?
Well, it's
tell ourselves it's okay.
There's a lot of we's here because the people that follow him, the people that support him, they're the ones that they were saying drain the swamp and don't let all these Wall Street people run things. And then what does he do? He gets all the Wall Street people to run things, and they make excuses saying, well, you have to have people that know what they're doing. You know, basically contradicting themselves but not seeing it.
Or that happens.
Mm-hmm.
That happens.
Yeah.
The Treasury, I saw that as a comment for the Treasury Secretary appointment, who was a Goldman Sachs crony, somebody who had plenty of experience in that industry. And the response is just, oh, that's part, you know, you're always going to get those guys in there. And not only that, but they're corrupt too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're there and they're corrupt. And that's how it is.
But Hillary Clinton was unacceptable. Why exactly?
Oh, because she was corrupt and made those people pay her.
You see, there's not going to be this aha moment where the people that voted for him say, oh my God, I was wrong. I see it now. No, they're going to keep justifying every single thing all the way to the concentration camps. I'm not kidding. This will happen. I'm not saying concentration camps will happen, but that kind of justification for no matter what he does that's hypocritical or an outright lie, they will continue to back him up regardless. So don't look for that. Don't look for them to change their minds. It won't happen anytime soon.
Yeah, they're going to be the people telling the, like, really, really bad gallows jokes that you don't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to set you off.
Uh-huh.
They're going to set you off while you're, you know, scavenging for bugs or whatever, wherever we end up.
Look, here's the thing, okay? It's December, what, 6th now? It's been about a month.
Yeah.
A month since D-Day. All right. Has he proven to us that he's not capable of holding this job? Has he, in this month that's gone by, has enough evidence been presented? I posit that yes. I think enough evidence has been put forth to prove that this guy doesn't have a clue how to be president of the United States and will be extremely dangerous for the future of this country and perhaps the future of this world, and anybody who values what the United States was founded upon and what the concept of democracy is all about, will do anything they can think of in their power to prevent this guy from taking office on January 20th. And fortunately, there are still some options. We can still stop this. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. They say, why don't you just accept it? Well, you know, you should never accept something that's unacceptable.
Yeah, try to dig down. Be a little unreasonable about asking, you know, asking the right questions and unreasonable about how to proceed. And I think there's been a lot of real dismissive, I think very flippant, but like dismissive retorts about any kind of recount or scrutiny.
Calling us crybabies, snowflakes even.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Why do they call us snowflakes? Snowflakes are beautiful. They're all unique. Because we melt? I mean, everyone melts.
It beats me. So that's the tone, is that, you know, he is, the fact is, he's the president, you know, and that's kind of the dismissiveness that you're faced if you bring up the recount or anything like it. And
yeah, but look at how these very same people react when there's any question called into the truthfulness of what it is that they're saying. For instance, there are some questions about certain states. You mentioned a recount, Michigan, in fact. The Attorney General, the Republican Attorney General of Michigan, tried to stop the recount that was obtained completely legally by Jill Stein of the Green Party. She raised I think, $2.5 million to have the recount go ahead. And this guy steps forward and says, this is a burden on the taxpayers of Michigan. Well, first of all, she just paid for it. So how is it a burden on the taxpayers? She paid the appropriate fees. She's a candidate. She has the right to do this. Why are you trying to stop something that is allowed? Just ask yourself that. This is something that she can say because I feel like it. You know, she doesn't have to give a reason. She's a candidate. She can call for a recount. Yeah, I don't think she expects to win. Yeah, even the late night TV shows are having fun at her expense. Even because I think people who are Democrats can't get over the fact that somebody challenged them who's to the left of center. So they're forever going to be mocking Jill Stein and anybody who is quote unquote left wing who did not vote for Clinton. You know, that's a serious problem that these guys have to get over. They have to stop with the infighting and realize that sometimes there are allies who disagree with you. In this particular case, what Jill Stein is doing is incredibly important because these are states where Trump won by a very slim margin. We're talking 10,000, 20,000 votes, not very many people at all. And it's not hard to find inconsistencies. In fact, they're already finding it in Michigan, although what a dumbass way they have of dealing with it. Apparently, if there's an inconsistency in the number of votes in a precinct, they just don't recount it. Instead of saying, wait a minute, something's wrong here, we need to investigate this, they just skip over it.
Yeah, we would take a broken ATM with more seriousness, like if it was not giving people the amount of money they were promised.
Yeah.
I mean, this is part of how these systems work. And you have one machine that is consistently not giving someone their soda can or whatever they are promised. You would go and try to fix that machine so that people would stop losing their dollars.
Mm-hmm.
This is something a little bit more important than a bag of chips or a refreshment, and yet we're not going to actually look at the machines in those particular districts. And on top of that, that moment when you're being asked, put your hands where I can see them, the Republican leadership is fumbling around and acting nervous,
mm-hmm.
kind of suspicious.
Very
wouldn't
suspicious.
Help you if it was a traffic stop to start reaching for things and putting stuff away that makes you look suspicious. And here we are with an automated system that we won't even look at like it's a parking meter that's taking quarters. It's like it's mm-hmm. less important than that to get right. I think this is way more important, and I think it's valid for third party candidates. Actual legal candidates to evaluate the entire process of electing someone, especially with these low vote counts in certain counties. And you've seen counties banding together, resisting the recounts.
The reaction is what is so suspicious here. And, it goes right up to the top. It goes right up to Trump because he reacted strongly against. He's calling Jill Stein a scam artist now and never even acknowledged her before. Just for wanting to get an accurate count. Why would somebody object to this? And then the dumbass goes and says millions of people voted illegally. Now you've just given the justification for a recount, except he seems to think that millions of people voting illegally will only vote against him.
It's the, I know you are, but what am I? It's that toddler thing where I'm going to say what you're saying. And then we're just all going to say the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and nobody, who knows who's right at that point. And it's just completely confusing the actual question, so that, and justifying him getting it both ways.
Well, thing is, you have these recounts now. They're trying to stop them every place, and again, that's just really suspicious behavior. Pennsylvania came up with this crazy rule that they have to pay $1 million, somebody local has to pay $1 million, something that's virtually impossible to pull off. Putting up roadblocks. I know that the Green Party is pushing for a recount in Pennsylvania in other methods, but most people are just mocking these efforts and thinking that it's going to amount to absolutely nothing. Maybe so, but it's courageous to move forward and try at least to see if something is wrong here and it should be supported. And you know, people who do not support that. I'll go on record as saying that I think there should have been a recount in North Carolina for the governorship, because that was a very close race too. I don't understand people that are mocking the Republican governor. He was a bit of a jerk. But if he wanted a recount for a close race, yeah, do it. Go ahead. That's your right. Of course, he probably said some stupid things along the way, accusing people of voting fraudulently and stuff like that. But it's a close race. There should be a recount, regardless of who's ahead and who's behind. So there's that. That's one way, and we need to support that. We need to look at that carefully. Then there are the electors, and they meet on December 19th, which is coming up. It's about 2 weeks away. And as of yesterday, I think we have the first Republican presidential elector that came out and said that he is not going to be voting for Donald Trump, a faithless elector. And we had some before. I don't really understand this. Maybe somebody can explain it to me. But we had Democrats saying, well, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump. Of course, we didn't expect you to vote for Donald Trump. Like, there was one from your state in Washington. The way I understand the system, and I can't really get a good explanation from anybody, but if your state voted Democrat, then you have Democrat electors on December 19th that will cast all their votes for the Democratic Party. That's my understanding of it. And the Republican electors just don't bother to show up on that day. So if the Democratic electors say they're not going to vote for Donald Trump, well, we knew they weren't going to vote for Donald Trump in the first place, so I don't know what that accomplishes by saying that. But this matters, because this is a guy from Texas who's a Republican. I'll read you what he says. I'm a Republican presidential elector, one of the 538 people asked to choose officially the president of the United States. Since the election, people have asked me to change my vote based on policy disagreements with Donald J. Trump. In some cases, they cite the popular vote difference. I do not think president-elect should be disqualified for policy disagreements. I do not think they should be disqualified because they won the Electoral College instead of the popular vote. However, now I am asked to cast a vote on December 19th for someone who shows daily he is not qualified for the office. 15 years ago, as a firefighter, I was part of the response to the September 11th attacks against our nation. That attack and this year's election may seem unrelated, but for me, the relationship becomes clearer every day. It goes on for quite a bit, but it ends this way. I get all the way to the end here. Sorry.
You have a lot to say.
We do, and this is important. The election of the next president is not yet a done deal. Electors of conscience can still do the right thing for the good of the country. Presidential electors have a legal right and a constitutional duty to vote their conscience. I believe electors should unify behind a Republican alternative, an honorable and qualified man or woman, such as Governor John Kasich of Ohio. Whatever. I pray my fellow electors will do their job and join with me in discovering who that person should be. 15 years ago, I swore an oath to defend my country and Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. On December 19th, I will do it again. And that was from Christopher Suprin. He works as a paramedic, lives in Texas, and is an elector, and he is not going to vote for Donald Trump. So if another 30 or so people of that 538, or however many are Republicans, do the same thing, then Trump does not get the Electoral College vote. Now, he could still be put in power by the House of Representatives. But, you know, if that happens, let them do that. Let's have this message be sent so that the electors don't put him in power. He does not get that particular vote of confidence. And the House of Representatives have to go on record as saying, yes, I think this guy will make a good president. My point is, there are still a number of options open, and we should be exploring every last one of them until there are no more options and January 20th comes, and then we see what happens at that point.
Yeah, give people a chance to evaluate this interim period, but also draw a line, because there are going to be some boundaries and some lines drawn if this fledgling administration goes through. There's a lot of talk of unity right now, I think, but it's going to be very hard for some people to come around and participate at all, as if there wasn't enough faith that has been sort of drawn out of the political and sort of government bureaucratic system that we're all part of, that we all participate in as citizens. So those new alliances and those boundaries, they're going to be important to define and to be sensitive to. And I don't know. I think we should just have every person that can have a say as an elector really think through their choice and have people around them actually speak to them so that we get a really good defined number of votes on that day. And then I guess we go from there as a citizenry as far as validating that system in the future and also just determining the course for our various communities.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm sorry, by the way, I'm sick, in case you hear me coughing in the background. You brought something back from Florida, gave it to me, now I'm distributing it around the whole area.
You don't have to rat me out.
Well, I'm just saying.
I have the CDC on my doorstep.
Well, maybe I can give it back to you. Can you do that? Can you pass colds back and forth? It's I'm trying. I'm trying to be considerate.
It wasn't Zika, okay.
I'm covering up. Yeah, it's
Ebola. I did not. Florida is weird, but not, like. Yeah.
The point is, you show up and you do what you're supposed to do, regardless.
There's no immunization for Florida.
Not that I know of. not yet. The thing is, don't give up. Don't give up, even if it looks dire. Even if the world seems hostile, it's not. There are plenty of people. Just remember, there's almost 3 million more people that voted the other way in this election, and that's only people who voted for that one other candidate. It doesn't represent all the people who didn't vote. It doesn't represent all the people who voted for somebody else. So to think that even though right now this voice is the loudest voice, it's the one that everyone is listening to, does not mean that it's going to be the dominant voice or that it's going to have any say over the future. That's up to us. That's up to all of us.
Yeah, that's still something we're building as a society. And it's a process. You know, my attitude is just, like, let's see this process play itself out, or see the process played out and see what logical conclusions we can come up with and derive from this life lesson that we're all sort of accepting, coming to terms with, cheering about, planning and resolving to respond against it, or I don't know what else. I can't say anything else. You got your cough drops?
I'm sorry. Cough drops work for some reason. Unless you choke on them, which I did before.
I'm treading water here. You got anything else?
Well, yeah, I do, actually.
Fall of Democracy. Go ahead.
Well, remember a few months ago, we had a certain Donald Trump visit, very ridiculously close, in Nissaquag, at the home of the people, I believe, named Loros, who are big contributors to Donald Trump.
I bet they are.
Well, it happened again. It happened again. And the thing is, I thought he was going to the same place. This was 3 days ago, December 3rd. He went to a costume party, the villains and hero costume party, dressed as himself.
Ha ha!
I'm not even making that up. But it was a different house. It was very close to the first house. This was these other people we talked about, the Mercers. They live in Head of the Harbor, which is like right next to Stony Brook. And he just showed up there. I had no idea he was even coming. But apparently, his motorcade plowed right through the area, and he was there on was it Friday evening? Scary when you think about this. So he just suddenly is closer than you could ever imagine. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump attended a Villains and Heroes costume party at a major donor's Long Island home on Saturday night, I'm sorry, but declined to don any garb that was in keeping with the theme. He entered the party hosted by the Mercer family, one of his biggest donors. They run that hedge fund up the hill, Renaissance Technologies. and his and his daughter is on the transition team. You know, it's incredible. Why are they so damn close? Why can't it be 100 miles away at least? Oh, anyway, so at their home in the village ahead of the harbor in St. James, you go down to where the mill pond is in Stony Brook. You make a left there, just go over that where the actual mill pond is, and that's the road they're on, right there. That's how close it is. Could run down there and be there in a few minutes.
Should be real proud, everybody.
Anyway, he basically arrived there wearing a suit and a blue and white checked tie. Who cares? Why is that part of the news story? Security guards at the event, however, were dressed as biker gang members, Hell's Angels. Well, they might have actually been the Hell's Angels. he walked into the home and gave reporters who were not allowed inside the thumbs up and posed briefly for photos, but did not respond to questions except to mouth me, pointing to himself when asked who he was dressed as. This is the kind of cleverness we need to get used to.
He has jokes.
Yeah, he comes with
that
jokes. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He spoke briefly at the party, thanking the Mercer family, according to a member of his press team, staying for just under 2 hours. It was his only outing from the Manhattan from his Manhattan home on Saturday. That's the other thing that annoys me, is the fact that he's in Manhattan so much. You know, that's my city too, okay? And I resent very much that it's being turned into an armed camp because of this imbecile. You know, if you're going to play president, play it in the damn White House, not on Fifth Avenue. Fair?
I second that.
All right.
No, for real. Like, get out of town. Go to your White House. Go be white with all your white people.
Well, anyway, he...
Leave us the hell out of it.
Yeah, seriously. He basically spent a lot of time tweeting about Saturday Night Live later on that evening, you know, because he didn't like the sketches on that show, because that really is what annoys him. He spends so much time criticizing people in the theater, criticizing the media, criticizing anybody that in any way says anything against him. But he doesn't criticize us. Why is that? He doesn't notice us. We're not big enough to be on his radar.
I accept that.
Can you imagine, though, if he did say something about us? Would we be scared, or would we be, would we feel like our lives had meaning then, you know? That's never going to happen.
You're really curious.
I am curious, you know? Well, I'm sort of also, I've got a fever, so I'm kind of delirious.
Why do we need to wonder about that? Why do we need our listeners to wonder about that?
Because this is the year where impossible things happen, okay? And it's just, you can't say nothing is impossible anymore. Or you can't say anything is impossible anymore, because it is possible.
Okay, yeah, he'll be the best president there ever was. He'll come pal around at
he'll
WUSB.
Listen to the failing Kyle and Emanuel show off the wall and how they try and make these out of space bad, very bad.
Community
like
radio, sad.
Yeah, extremely sad.
Yeah, so...
Don't go to WUSB.FM and support the radio station.
Yeah, and then we'll get a bunch of phone calls. For people who are on the fence.
Totally biased, not funny, and the Baldwin impersonation just can't get any worse. Sad. That's actually what he did say on on Twitter on Saturday night in response to the SNL sketch. But, you know, it's all these other horrible people are traveling with him. Kellyanne Conway was there, and Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon was in this town, within feet of this place, on Saturday.
And what do you have to say? What were you doing this weekend? Huh? What were you doing, Long Island?
I don't know how Reuters got this.
Snuck up on you.
I don't know how Reuters got this part of the story. A Wi-Fi network set up for the party used the password HeroesWin! !
What? Whose Wi-Fi?
A Wi-Fi network set up for the party used the password HeroesWin! !
Oh, is there any...
How'd they get the password? Could that be the name of the network?
Maybe the SSID.
Can you have an exclamation point in the SSID?
You might. Special characters for an SSID? That doesn't seem right. Maybe that's
so
the password that they gave
how'd
out.
How'd they get the password? Wow, that's what I'd like to know.
Well, if you go and you're in a press pool and, you know, I need to use the internet. Hey, I'm just visiting news crew. Yeah, totally you could get the password.
You wanna,
it might even be posted.
You want to pass by the house after the show and try to log in?
Not really.
No, you're right. No, that would be a bad idea. We're not going to do that, for sure. Robert Mercer, the billionaire at whose mansion on Long Island's... what? What is that? Can you read that, please? That word, that first sentence. Robert Mercer, the billionaire at whose mansion on Long Island's Tony North Shore? Is that a word? Tony North Shore? That's what it says, right?
Yeah, you're right. Tony, in lowercase, not proper noun.
Is that a way of describing the North Shore?
I want to say they meant only North Shore, the party.
Well, why would they say only North Shore? Why would we have two North Shores?
The party was held. On Long Island's Tony North Shore, the party was held.
It's some way of describing the North Shore that I'm sure I don't like. I'll look it up.
Tiny North Shore.
Wait, it's not tiny, though. It's Long Island. It's a long shore.
Co-chief of Renaissance Tech. That has to be a shell company for garbage.
Well, we can get into that. But, yeah, he's the co-chief executive of Renaissance Technologies, and it's a hedge fund. His daughter, Rebecca Mercer, sits on Trump's transition team. It's right here in the Stony Brook area. Now, Mercer initially supported Ted Cruz, in case he's looking for any redemption whatsoever, although that's not much of redemption in my eyes.
Gross.
Then he put his support behind Trump in the November presidential election.
Wrong.
That happened. That happened right here. But getting back to Manhattan, where the other occupation is taking place, Mayor de Blasio says he wants the federal government to pay $35 million to cover all the security costs of protecting this guy. NYPD officers basically are constantly putting up barriers and blocking the street. And I like how this Newsday story opened up. City officials have a message for the federal government and President-elect Donald Trump. Pay up or get out. Well, no, pay up and get out. Okay, yeah, I like that even better. De Blasio penned a letter to Barack Obama's administration requesting $35 million in federal reimbursements for the NYPD's role in securing the area outside Trump Tower between November 8th and January 20th. It's funny how Obama's the one that's got to deal with this, just like he's the one that's got to deal with all the angry Chinese people in the Chinese government. We haven't even gotten to that. He said he believes the sum will cover the entire cost of the extra security for that period, and that equates to... about $450,000 being spent on security each day. My question, and I don't think it's an unreasonable question, what happens if they just opt not to have security?
Yeah,
what
that's
happens?
A great idea.
I'm just curious. I'd like to know. Are we legally required to waste $500,000 a day to protect an unpopular person who has decided to plant his ass there?
Like, what if he decides he's just going to sit on the very top of the Taj Mahal, We have to pay for every bit of security for him to plant his gilded hiney on the top of some monument and get things dropped off by balloon and, you know, a butler with a jetpack or something. Like, every eccentricity he sees fit is now something we have to pay for. As a nation, I find that crazy.
So let's say we just opt not to do that. Fifth Avenue opens up as normal, and first of all, he's in the damn building, so I don't see what the... You have a doorman, that's enough usually to keep most people out. Okay, maybe you get a second doorman. I don't know, but
he
covers the damn cost. It's his building,
there's
right?
Deplorables. He's got deplorables. The deplorables will protect him.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be something that disrupts New York, and it should be something that we have to pay for. But my question is, are we obligated to do that? If we're not obligated to do that, then why the hell are we doing that?
I don't think we should be obligated. I don't know that we are. He's not even president yet, and he's costing us this this much. Not just financial costs, but, like, the inconvenience, the sort of reconfiguring of a pretty central part of Manhattan is, it's not a small task. It's not a non-disruptive act, right? I mean, that fencing and all of that stuff totally changes the dynamic in a pretty
crowded part of the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And the holiday season, you know, that's doing to the merchants in the area.
Thanks, Trump.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing for them as well. And I know a lot of people are probably saying to the radio right now, why can't you just respect the guy? You won the presidency, respect the office. Yeah, you know, respect is something that's earned, and respect is something that he has not given to anybody else. He has disrespected the office of the president more than I ever could, and he has disrespected this country more than I think any of us could. So, no, he doesn't just get respect because he happened to put himself in this particular position. He has zero respect from me and from a number of other people, so I don't feel guilty. I don't feel guilty saying these things. When people do good things, I try to acknowledge it, and everything he's done has been for himself. I'm sorry people can't see that. I'm sorry enough people can't see that. I'm sorry they're being fooled with all this nonsense. And I hope one day they will realize that they were taken in by this. But until that day, we're going to be here to challenge every single step of this evil road we're going down.
And don't come to me, don't come to us talking about how we're the cause of frustration, we're the impediment to the greatness in any way.
Oh, they will, though. They will.
Oh, no, no.
We're the problem.
Oh, no, no. No. That's again something you don't even get. You don't even get, it's a non-starter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not going to fly. We did not sign up for this. This was your grand plan. And if you wanted help, there's a definite attitude and a definite way of reaching out to people. And that was not done.
Right. And, you know, the people that are saying, oh, respect the guy, respect the office, are probably people that did not respect Obama during his 8 years. In fact, I've never seen so much disrespect towards a president from members of Congress.
Unending.
And basically, so much could have been accomplished, so much positivity could have been had with that cooperation. And he was certainly willing to go across the aisle and talk to people with differing opinions and compromise. In fact, if he's guilty of anything, it's compromising too much. But these guys, in fact, there's going to be a good Vice piece on this, I think, on Friday. They would rather blow up the entire thing than yield in any way. And that's not how you govern. You don't govern in that stubborn method. You have to compromise. You have to listen. You have to reflect the will of the people. And that's not what we've been seeing in the last 8 years. So, no, this guy does not get my respect because he did not give out any respect. He led the campaign to basically make Obama a non-citizen. And
the
completely,
false campaign.
Yeah, completely
while the people
unfit for office. He did that for all this time. That was harmful. That really, a lot of people bought into that because people buy into these nonsense theories.
Yeah, it was totally a false claim, false... under false pretenses, denigrating his office and his achievements, and all while people that could act on it were obstructing the political process in place. I'm sorry, it's just the height of hypocrisy. So to come and ask for, you know, people to unify around you in some... No.
Oh,
that's
no,
garbage.
no, Kai, we are unifying.
we're unified.
Unifying
yeah.
with him. We're unifying
exactly.
against him.
You'll find there's unity. It's just not going to be
you
the unity
will
that
see
you're
unity
expecting.
Like you have never seen unity before. That is the good that's going to come out of all this.
Absolutely.
And I feel that every day, and I see that in the people around me, and I see that in what's being reported. It's out there. We're going to be stronger as a result of this. Do not doubt that. We may sound negative and cynical, but I think we carry tremendous hope as well, because there's so much power that people have when they unite together and when they respect each other. And I think that's what we're starting to see now, is more self-respect towards each other.
Yeah, and that we need one another. We need to listen to move on, to create something anew, mm-hmm. in the face of these kinds of factions and movements.
It's easy to be convinced otherwise, because most of the mail we get is hate mail. I will tell you that right now. Most people say, "Oh, I can't believe you're whining about, you know, the usual."
Yeah.
If you go to Newsday, almost 100% of the people who post now are racist pigs. So it's very easy to believe, reading what people send you, what people say on Facebook, what people say in forums, that this is the majority, and it's not. It's just the people that are the loudest, that are the most persistent, that are the most annoying. Don't give them more credit than they deserve, because the real people are outside, around you, and you can have some really, really good conversations. Hey, we went to Union Square last Friday. I wasn't aware. I'd heard about it, but I wasn't aware of how big this was. Union Square is a subway station in downtown New York. And since Election Day, people have been putting sticky notes up on the walls there with all kinds of messages of hope and consolation, anger, all sorts of things based on what happened on Election Day, because it hit New York really, really hard. We noticed this. People were walking around in the days afterwards. No one saw this coming. To see this, it just went on. It went on for so long. I took some pictures of it. I tweeted a few images, and it was a very emotional moment to see just how many people had written something, and how they were just using this forum to comfort each other, and the power that symbolic statement had. We saw, you know, a long series of walls, and then I found out that we had only seen half of it. There was another entrance that did the same thing on the other side of the station.
Yeah, there were multiple hallways, and just to see, I remember looking at that and I was thinking to myself, there's so many people that walked through here. Then there were so many people that walked through here, had something to say, and then there's so many people that walked through here, had something to say, and then were motivated enough to actually write it down on a post-it note and stick it to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Made me realize how huge this city is.
Yes.
And just the flow of people and emotions and sentiments and things that were on people's minds that were passing by that wall to create that in just the month, the couple weeks or the month that we've had since is really just eye-opening. It's a lot to take in, and I think it really expresses where people are at, that they're all taking in these different perspectives and what it means for them, and are processing communally in this way by expressing different sentiments and then sharing it, being able to see it.
And that's something I would like to ask the people that expect us to respect this person, this office, whatever. Do you respect that? Do you respect that outpouring of emotion, of expression that the people of New York City are engaged in right now? Do you respect that, or do you mock that? Because I sense that a lot of people just dismiss that sort of thing as a bunch of crybabies, because that's all I ever hear. And it's so much more than that. It's so much more powerful than that. That is true expression. You know what I didn't see? I didn't see hatred in those post-it notes. I just saw sympathy and determination, strength, consolation, all that. You know, a lot of opportunity for hatred, but hatred isn't really, it doesn't empower you very much. And it's something that I think most of us shy away from, and that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't come naturally. It's manifested. I think people focus it away from unhealthy things and are focusing it in humor and in commentary, things that will benefit other people,
right?
Instead of you know, taking energy away from other people and tearing them down. I think that it's an important moment to support expression and support people who are going through the same thing with ideas and ways of thinking about it. Because your idea, the things that you've noticed, they may be something that somebody else needs to hear. So look for that and share that in your community. That's definitely a way you can proceed and continue building the kind of future that we'd like. So.
Yeah, that to me is reality. That's true expression of individual people. And you might not have that in your city, you might not have that in your village, but it's there. Even if it's just coming from you, it's real. It matters, and it should never be dismissed. So I was, you know, around the area. I wasn't even aware that was going on, not to that extent. So that really was a shot in the arm for me to see that, to feel that. And I think we'll be having a lot more moments like that over the months and years ahead as we face off against all kinds of issues. I can't even imagine what is ahead, assuming none of the legal challenges, the challenges that are completely protected by the Constitution, as long as none of those actually succeed and we have to deal with this this reality. I mean, the media has pretty much already concluded that there's no alternative. The fact is, there still is. There still are ways electors can vote in a different way, or all sorts of other things can happen. But if that does not occur, then we're facing new ground, as everyone says, and it'll be interesting. But we'll face it together. Speaking of new things, though, as we near the last couple of minutes of the show. We are basically building our new studio here at the radio station. We saw some of it in progress last week.
Yeah.
And wow, you know, if you had listened to us a year ago, we were kind of tearing our hair out wondering what was going to happen. And now, as we dismantle this place, it's being dismantled around us as we speak, and start building the new place, I am just filled with hope and anticipation.
Yeah, I can't even put it into words, but this place is changing so quickly. When I came here to start and then to see where we're going now,
mm-hmm.
it is a space station that we are building for ourselves. It is a state-of-the-art communications hub for this campus, a place that will be the home. I mean, I was watching engineers and volunteers pulling cables, realizing those cables, they could be in the walls and in that conduit for decades, 50 years, 60 years.
Just like these ones.
100
are,
years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, as old as a lot of this stuff is here that we look at, I realize the same kind of volunteers and spirit led to those things being installed here. So that is the sort of milestone. That's where we're at. It is a reenactment or a rebirth of the station into this, as I said, state-of-the-art, modern, beautiful, soundproofed. Every convenience, everything has been thought through, ergonomic, you name it.
And what's incredible is you're seeing some of the same people who built the first studio involved in building the next studio. They built the studio back in the 70s. And back now to especially Frank, who is our chief engineer, who's designing all this. It's just incredible to see that happening, but also to see all the students that are now involved. More students, I think, than we've had in a long time, and really into radio, making good radio too. If you guys get a chance to keep listening to this station after we're not on the air, or maybe specifically when we're not on the air, you will probably hear some fantastic stuff, both musically, conversationally, alternative news, you name it. And that's the magic of radio. That's why we do radio. That's why we stay here and broadcast 24 hours a day to Long Island, but also to the world. And the history that we make here in these studios is second to none.
Yeah, we got a really amazing community, but the programs and the music, the art that goes on around this is uncanny, and we are going to be moving to a place that has a myriad of resources that will allow for much more of that art. So stay tuned and stay excited, because we are exponentially expanding our capabilities to do radio.
So over the next couple of weeks, you'll be hearing some strange sounds and transitions and all kinds of exciting things as USB moves into its new home. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be an adventure. Anyway, that's it for us. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Rubber band. There's a rubber band that plays tunes out of tune in the library garden Sunday afternoon, while a little chappy waves a golden wand. Rubber band. In 1910 I was so handsome and so strong. My moustache was stiffly waxed and 1 foot long. And I loved a girl while you played tea time tunes. Dear rubber band,
you're playing my tune out of tune. Oh. Rubber band, won't you play your haunting theme again to me? While I eat my scones and drink my cup of tea. The sun is warm, but it's a lonely afternoon. Rubber band, how I wish that I could join your rubber band. We could play in lively parks throughout the land. And one Sunday afternoon I'd find my love. Rubber band, in the 1418 war I went to sea. Thought my Sunday love was waiting home for me. And now she's married to the leader of your band. I hope you break up that